On the ascent back up, we can hear a battle erupting outside and voices yelling that the Vox Populi are coming. It seems Elizabeth has taken us into a world where the Vox Populi already have weapons. On the desk in front of the lockup, we now have a new recording of Daisy Fitzroy.
You ever see a forest at the beginning of a fire? Before the first flame, you see them possums and squirrels running through the trees. They know what's coming. But the fat bears with their bellies full of honey, well, you can't hardly wake them up from their comfortable hibernation. We're going to Emporium, and then we're going to see what it takes to rouse them from their slumber.
Angry black woman is going to kill all the white masses. Oh, I meant industrial capitalists. After all, this is clearly just a labor movement. We now exit the police station to see scenes of mass civil unrest and open combat between hordes of the Vox Populi and the Colombian authorities. And Daisy Fitzroy is yelling over the PA systems about what real sins are. Making our way back to the elevator to take us out of Shantytown, we pass a young black girl singing an a cappella rendition of the 1969 song Fortunate Son by Creedence Clearwater Revival. Up ahead is a giant poster of Booker DeWitt on the wall, and a Vox Populi fighter in the street explains to us why.
You're Booker DeWitt, the hero of the Vox!
What the hell are they talking about?
Look at that poster. In this world, you're a hero.
I remember I led the Vox. Slate and I burned down the Hall of Heroes.
Booker, your nose.
Hard to think of. Two memories in the same
Booker,
place.
Booker, come back to me. We're going to find Daisy Fitzroy.
And we're getting out of here on the First Lady. Let's go.
Again, if this is how interdimensional travel affects the mind, then DeWitt should have obtained all of Comstock's memories when he crossed over into the original reality at the beginning of the game. And Comstock should have gotten his. Yet, this didn't happen because that would ruin the revelation that DeWitt and Comstock are the same person from two different dimensions. Moving along, we see the Vox murdering Colombian troops up ahead who had either surrendered or been taken captive. Near the elevator entrance, we see Daisy Fitzroy broadcasting a speech from the First Lady Airship.
Booker DeWitt died for this day! It was he who spoke with one voice of the people!
Note here that very shortly, we're going to find out that the DeWitt who died in this reality wasn't really a martyr and didn't really believe in the Vox Populi cause, and Daisy Fitzroy probably knew it. That DeWitt was just using the Vox Populi as a means to his own ends, which was to get Elizabeth. The scene here also expresses more black racial animus toward whites, though it's carefully couched, once again, in an ahistorical black-Irish alliance against big capitalists. But let's move on to what is said on the elevator ride back up to Finkton.
In this world, you are a martyr.
These folk need a better class of hero. When it comes down to it, the only difference between Comstock and Fitzroy is how you spell the name.
This is meant to convey an even-handedness between how Irrational Games presents the Vox Populi movement and Colombia's jingoistic white nationalism. But it also curiously conveys more self-loathing on the part of DeWitt, which ties into the ending again. DeWitt and Elizabeth are ultimately responsible for all this turmoil, not Daisy Fitzroy, and not the Vox Populi. On our way back to Finkton, Elizabeth lays down some more important foundations for this central theme.
Well, I guess we did it. I don't know if I brought us to a world where the Vox had weapons, or I created one.
Now recall again that much earlier, she referred to her tears as a form of wish fulfillment. This messaging is only going to get more overt from here on out, and it should undermine any notion of even-handedness. When we arrive back at Chin Lin's shop, which really shouldn't be necessary at this point since the Vox Populi already has weapons and are burning down Columbia, we discover that Chen Lin and his wife are dead.
This is not what I meant to have happen.
Elizabeth.
They're dead, Booker.
Come on. Let's leave this place. Let's go to the factory and get our airship. This isn't our responsibility. None of it. You just opened a door to this world and we stepped through.
Are you sure, Booker? Did I just bring us to a world where Chen Lin was alive? Or did I create it? I told you, I always thought that my little trick was a form of wish fulfillment. I got my wish.
Like I've said repeatedly, the game is slowly suggesting that all the suffering is actually Elizabeth's fault as much as it is DeWitt's. Which is somewhat amusing if you think about it, because in a way, it inadvertently suggests that some people have more agency than others. Also, nearby is a voxophone, revealing that the dead DeWitt of this reality wasn't really a martyr.
Looks like I got a friend in town after all. Slate. He's fell in with these Vox Populi. And for irregulars, I will say, they are loaded for bear. Problem is, I gotta help them with their damn revolution first. Then we take Comstock House by storm. I do that, I get the girl.
Now DeWitt and Elizabeth move on to Fink's factory as the Vox Populi invades it. Outside the gates, the Vox Populi is attacked by one of Comstock's airships, which you promptly board and sabotage, as Fitzroy spouts off more nonsense about how we'll be peaceful with you as long as you're peaceful with us. Inside the factory, we take an elevator up to Fink's office. On the way up, Elizabeth makes some more commentary.
They're just right for each other, aren't they?
Who?
Fitzroy and Comstock.
This is once again trying to convey a notion of every party being equally guilty here in some sense. But then Elizabeth continues.
May Lin? Mr. Lin? My God, I was so set on getting to Paris. I didn't really think that...
You couldn't have known this would happen.
I had a role in this catastrophe. If you want to pretend that we're purely innocents in this, then that's your prerogative, but...
Elizabeth, at this point, is now openly assigning herself guilt for everything that has transpired in Columbia. In some ways, she's portrayed as being just as selfish as DeWitt. She views the entire world through her little idyllic notions of Paris, and now it's getting everybody killed. Ironically, the game isn't really celebrating her liberation anymore. But now the phone is ringing, so let's see who it is.
Hello, Fink?
I saw you die, Booker. Saw with my own eyes.
Fitzroy. Listen, I got you your guns. I'm here for my airship.
But my Booker DeWitt died for the Vox Populi. You either an imposter or a ghost. My Booker DeWitt was a hero to the cause, a story to tell your children. You just complicate the narrative.
So here we learn that Booker DeWitt died in this reality, and it's insinuated that his presence here complicates Daisy Fitzroy's martyrdom narrative that she's concocted for him. When we get off the elevator, we are confronted by Daisy's thugs who try to kill us. Again, this is meant to convey more of a sense of impartiality by turning the Vox Populi against the player. After killing Daisy's men, we discover a nearby recording of Jeremiah Fink's.
These holes have shown me yet another wonder, though I've yet to see the application for it. They illuminate a merger of machine and man that is somehow the lesser yet the greater of both parties. The process seems to be irreversible. Perhaps, though, Comstock will have some need of this kind of thing to keep watch in that tower he is building.
This is where we learn that the universe of Rapture in the first game is directly tied to this one. Fink is referencing contact between Dr. Su Chong via the interdimensional tear technology developed by the Lutes twins, and thereby his access to Su Chong's Big Daddy creations, which were what was used as a base for the creation of Songbird. When we step outside, we witness Fitzroy murder Fink. Afterwards, she orders that the Vox kill us and burn our bodies. After we kill her minions, Elizabeth sees that Fitzroy is about to murder Fink's son. Elizabeth begs us to do something.
No, no, no! She's going to kill that child. Booker, we have to do something. We have to act. We have to get in there. Come on, Booker, we've got to get out of here. Boost me up. Go to the window and distract Daisy. Go!
Is this it? Is this your movement, Daisy?
This is what needs to be done. You see, the founders ain't nothing but weeds. Cut them down and they just grow back. If you want to get rid of the weed, you gotta pull it up from the root. It's the only way to be...
Elizabeth.
I guess it runs in the family.
Elizabeth.
Note here how Elizabeth says, "It runs in the family." This is a reference to her inheriting Comstock's brutality. Yes, she isn't really Comstock's daughter, but she is DeWitt's, and what is DeWitt also known for? His savagery.
Your savagery, Mr. DeWitt.
Initially, the scene does seem to portray Daisy Fitzroy as equally depraved as Comstock and DeWitt. But remember, she's reacting to their behavior, and what's more, if you play the DLC, you find out that she never had any intention of actually harming the boy.
I will see Fink and Comstock burn, but I will not hold the son to account for the deeds of his father.
You've misunderstood us.
We neither asked you to harm the child.
Nor did we promise that yours would be the hand that would set Comstock's world afire.
A famous man once said...
And a famous man shall say...
I may reach the mountaintop.
But I fear I shall never visit the valley below.
But you mean I won't live to see the... No.
It's up to you what matters more.
Your part in the play.
Or the play itself.
Someone is coming.
She'll arrive, a girl.
She must leave, a woman.
And what makes the difference between a girl and a woman?
Blood.
Your part in the play.
Or the play itself.
Turn her into a killer? How?
Give the girl no choice.
And she will be forced to make one.
Note that the Lutece twins are referencing the famous mountaintop speech by Martin Luther King. After making this speech, he was assassinated the very next day. Thus, the symbolism is that Fitzroy, like King, was a martyr. The lines are also a biblical reference to Moses leading his people to the Promised Land in Deuteronomy 34:1-4. What should also be highlighted here is that while Daisy Fitzroy won't hold the son to account for the deeds of the father, that's exactly what Ken Levine did with the game's ending. He condemned Elizabeth to not only die, but to never have been born, all because of the sins of her father. Even taking into account the guilt that the game ascribes to Elizabeth, she never would have had her magical transdimensional tear abilities had she not been sold to Comstock. After killing Fitzroy, Elizabeth runs off to the First Lady airship, which is docked nearby. DeWitt gives chase. Elizabeth locks herself inside the cabin, and DeWitt, after trying to get her to come out, simply plots a new course. Shortly after this, Elizabeth emerges with a new haircut and dress, which was worn by her dead mother.
This is all they had.
Listen.
How do you do it?
How do I do what?
Forget. How do you wash away the things that you've done?
You don't. Just learn to live with it.
Once again, Elizabeth is alluding to the culpability both she and DeWitt carry, and what's more, DeWitt even explicitly states here that there is no redemption. After this, Songbird attacks the airship and crashes it. DeWitt and Elizabeth find themselves next to the Lutece twins who are playing Songbird's song on a piano. Elizabeth says we have to stop them, lest the song draw the bird back.
You've done it now. He's coming back. He's coming back.
The notes were correct.
The instrument was not.
One needs both to get his attention.
But if you know how to sing to him...
He will take you where you need to go.
we are, where we are needed.
And needed where we are.
So Comstock uses these songs. Are there others we can use? Something to keep the bird off our back?
Perhaps you should ask the maestro himself.
So where is he? Of course.
From here, we head toward Comstock House, passing by some Colombian refugees fleeing the Vox Populi. Again, this is meant to convey some kind of even-handedness. The idea is that the Vox Populi are essentially no better than the Colombians they're overthrowing. As an aside, the goal of DeWitt and Elizabeth this entire time has been to leave Colombia. In theory, they could just jump on one of these vessels and leave. However, doing this would ruin the endgame revelation, which is that they're ultimately responsible for all of this tragedy. Up ahead, we have to fight our way through more Vox Populi, which, again, is meant to convey even-handedness, that the Vox Populi are essentially just as evil as the Columbia they want to destroy. But consider what happens when you walk through the next doorway.
Appreciate a lady who appreciates value!
Look at this. Fitzroy's no better than Comstock. Was she?
Once people get their blood up, it ain't easy to settle it down again.
This is on our hands, isn't it?
Now, yes, the claim is that Fitzroy is no better than Comstock, but afterwards, the game immediately asserts that Fitzroy isn't really responsible for her behavior. Elizabeth literally says here that all this is on their hands. From here, we head toward the gondola that will take us to the Emporia, and from there, to Comstock House. On the ride over, we spot the Lutece twins again.
I just realized who those two are. They, well, at least she, invented the technology that allows the city to float.
Giant balloons.
Quantum particles, suspended in space-time at a fixed height.
So, not giant balloons?
But the thing is, my book said they disappeared several years ago.
I told you they'd come.
No, you didn't.
Right. I was going to tell you they'd come.
But you didn't.
But I don't.
Are you sure that's right?
Something tells me they're not exactly what they appear.
I was going to have told you they'd come?
No.
The subjunctive?
That's not the subjunctive.
I don't think the syntax has been invented yet.
It would have had to have been.
Had to have had been. That can't be right.
They seem to want to help.
They seem to be out of their minds.
Odd, isn't it?
What's odd?
The fact that we sometimes...
finish each other's sentences?
Exactly.
It would be odder if we didn't.
How do you suppose they manage that?
I'll get back to you after I figure out the floating city bit.
This little back and forth between the Lutece twins is a primer for the game's eventual reveal that the space-time continuum is actually unchangeable. Remember, constants and variables. Once we get off the gondola, we come across another one of Comstock's propaganda posters.
The seed of the prophet shall sit the throne. He was grooming me, wasn't he?
Comstock? Yeah, I think so.
Then why lock me up?
Well, I'm guessing you didn't want to be groomed. Maybe he had something in the works to make you agreeable.
Like what?
I think it's best we don't find out.
From here, we kill some more Vox Populi, and then we come across another one of Preston Down's voxophones.
Mr. Comstock, when we next meet, it won't be to parley. See, I went out to that Hall of Heroes to scalp your false shepherd for you. Turns out, though, DeWitt speaks Sioux. He helped me to swap words with this crippled child I've been, looking after. Now, after hearing how the kid has fared in your city, I'm thinking when we take your pelt, I'll let him hold the knife.
So once again, we're met with something that really makes no sense. Why does Preston Down suddenly care about what happens to a little Sioux boy in Colombia after spending years in the Wild West scalping people? Why is a Sioux boy even in Colombia? There's no explanation for this, or any explanation as to why Preston suddenly wants to kill Comstock. Honestly, my best guess here is that this is a poorly thought out way to remind players who's the real villain, in case they got a little confused about all the even-handedness. From here, we discover two recordings by Rosalind Lutece explaining that she and her brother Robert are not actually twins, but rather the same person from two different realities, who communicated via quantum measurement of atoms. Rosalind also explains that Comstock never actually understood the physics involved. The Lutece field was about probability, not prophecy, and that she worked with him only out of convenience. But from a certain angle, her notion of probability versus prophecy doesn't really make much sense either, since the ending revolves around the idea of constants and variables. But for now, let us listen to the third voxophone of hers, found also in this area.
You have been transfused, brother, into a new reality. But your body rejects the cognitive dissonance through confusion and hemorrhage. But we are together, and I will mend you. For what separates us now but a single chromosome?
Now again, the in-game rules for how interdimensional travel affects the mind change depending on whether or not the writers wanted DeWitt to forget old memories or absorb new ones. When he and Elizabeth first traveled to the reality where the Vox Populi already had weapons, he absorbed the memories of his martyred self. But when DeWitt was first brought to Comstock's original dimension, he not only didn't absorb Comstock's memories, but he forgot who he previously was. In any event, we now finally arrive at the end of the level, but the elevator to progress forward has a special dual-dial lock.
Can you open this?
It's a simple dual-dial lock. My book said most fools keep the combination no more than 20 feet away.
Let's hope we find one of those fools. Why are you so keen on lockpicking and code-breaking?
If you put a person in a cage, they develop an interest in such things.
I suppose so.
And I won't be locked up again, but...
Elizabeth. Elizabeth, you...
Promise me.
I will stop him.
No. That is an oath you cannot keep. But promise me that if it comes to it, you will not let him take me back.
It won't come to that. All right.
The scene here is likely meant to get our young male gamer excited about the potential prospect of a romance with this young princess he rescued from the evil wizard's castle. Remember, at this point, the player doesn't know that Elizabeth is DeWitt's daughter. Elizabeth's melodramatic declaration that she'd rather die than go back to living inside the Statue of Liberty is probably meant to solidify the young male gamer's desire to protect his damsel in distress. Such will also make the reveal at the end that the young male gamer was actually Comstock this whole time all the more powerful, the message being that the young male gamer is the very thing he wants to protect Elizabeth from. Once in the Emporia, we can see all the mayhem that the Vox Populi have caused. Burnt out shops and dead civilians are everywhere. But, just in case you were starting to get the wrong idea, DeWitt and Elizabeth has some commentary to set you back on the straight and narrow path.
What a waste. How's the city going to come back from this?
Maybe it shouldn't.
Somewhere in one of the nearby shops, you can find another recording of Comstock.
In front of all the men, the sergeant looked at me and said, "Your family tree shelters a teepee or two, doesn't it, son?" This lie, this calumny, it followed me all my life. From that day, no man truly called me comrade. It was only when I burnt the teepees with the squaws inside that they take me as one of their own. Only blood can redeem blood.
And here we have it, the mean racist white man isn't as white as he thinks he is trope, in all its cliched glory. And now we know that white identity politics and Christianity will inevitably lead to burnt squaws and teepees. Finally, we get outside of Comstock House, but there's a problem, it's locked.
Lady Comstock, how lovely to see you. Wonderful of you to make the journey, especially considering your painful death 19 years ago.
Lady Comstock.
The dress. The thing has mistaken me for my mother.
Your fingerprints do not seem to be your own today, Lady Comstock. Are you unwell?
This isn't going to work.
I think it can.
Your mother's dead, Elizabeth.
Yes. I think it's time I paid my respects. Let's head to where she's buried.
So Columbia imports black criminals to smash giant stones on a floating vessel in the sky, yet also has fingerprint scanner with a built-in AI that's smart enough to make jokes, but not smart enough to remove Lady Comstock's ability to open a door after she's been declared dead. Yes, this is supposed to be comic relief, and maybe if this game didn't take a giant dump on my people and my nation's founders, I'd be laughing. But now we must visit Lady Comstock's grave, because Levine wanted to make another statement. But first, we have to use Elizabeth's interdimensional tears on the door, even when there's no lock, so she can unlock the door.
It's your mother's grave.
They have her preserved in an airtight chamber. Her fingerprints will get us into Comstock House.
She's your mother.
A mother who abandons their child doesn't draw a lot of sympathy in my book.
Take a moment to think about what you're doing.
There. Will you open the door, or do I have to go in without you?
Elizabeth.
It's her. How are you, Mother? All locked up in there, huh? Looks like you and I have some common ground.
Let me do it.
No.
Let me do it.
The purpose of this little side trip is now apparent. The writers really want us focused on the fact that Lady Comstock is a bad mother who cruelly abandoned her child.
Shepherd, and he has led you astray. What I do for love. What lions does not cringe to see their cub in pain? But spare the rod, spoil the child. If you won't listen to me, perhaps you will listen to your mother.
Elizabeth, are you all right?
Where did she go?
Just hold on. You need to rest for a minute.
No, I'm getting that hand.
Elizabeth, why is your mother a ghost?
She's not. He used me to power that device. He opened up some kind of tear.
Okay, so Comstock knew that Elizabeth would come here to rip off his dead wife's hand to get into his house, yet didn't station any troops here. Instead, he installed a strange mini-siphon system to leech Elizabeth's powers in order to manifest a strange ghost of his dead wife. Even in this game's nonsensical nature, it still manages to suggest to the audience that the white, male Christian zealot derives all his power from those he oppresses.
But you just write the story you want to write, and honestly, the only time you think about, is this good, is this bad, is it, you know, is this in good taste, do we have it or not, is when it affects the experience and takes you out of the experience, the story you're trying to tell.
In any event, we must now fight Elizabeth's dead mother as she screams about the lie that spewed from her womb. Once we defeat her, we get some more meta-commentary from DeWitt and the Lutece twins who reappear.
What is she?
I don't know. What am I? My God. Is she the source of my power?
But what is she? Alive or dead?
Why do you ask what?
When the delicious question is when.
The only difference between past and present
is semantics.
Lives, lived, will live.
Dies, died, will die.
If we could perceive time as it truly was,
what reason would grammar professors have to get out of bed?
Like us all, Lady Comstock exists across time.
She is both alive and dead.
She perceives being both.
She finds this condition disagreeable.
Perception without comprehension
is a dangerous combination.
Look! Footsteps.
She goes to unfinished business.
We have to follow her. Convince her to open the gate to Comstock House.
One of the most fascinating things about Bioshock Infinite is that it relies so heavily on Hugh Everett's many worlds interpretation of quantum mechanics, yet it literally forbids the existence of a world in which a white Christian ethnostate does not drown in flame the mountains of man. The Lutece twins aren't done with us yet, though.
It's a shame you have need of her to enter Comstock House.
Frankly, she doesn't seem all that cooperative.
There is a way to bring her to reason.
Three truths you must discover first.
Truths which, in this world, Comstock has destroyed.
If only one of you had the power to alter time and space.
That would be a blessing, wouldn't it?
Well, they're sarcastic.
So now we have to run around looking for these truths that the evil, racist, religious white man hid from his own people. Of course, on the way, we can stop by Albert Fink's musical shop to listen to another one of his brother Jeremiah Fink's recordings.
My dear brother, these holes in the thin air continue to pay dividends. I know not which musician you borrow your notes from, but if he has half the genius of the biologist I now observe, well, then you are to be the Mozart of Columbia.
Like I said before at the Good Times Club, the insinuation here is that all the inventions and achievements of white society were derived from elsewhere. The biologist Fink is referring to here is Dr. Su Chung from Rapture, and this is confirmed later in the DLC Burial at Sea. Up ahead in the Market District, we come upon the Lutece's house, where there is a tear in one of their machines revealing the first truth.
You are!
That's my mother.
I assure you, madam, my sexual interest in your dear prophet is non-existent.
And Madame Lutece?
Furthermore, the man is quite sterile.
Were you to them?
A child that they decided to imprison. She deserved whatever Comstock did to her.
There's a nearby voxophone that explains this in a bit more detail. Comstock, as Rosalind Lutece states, quote, seems to have been made sterile by simple exposure to our contraption, unquote. Yet there's no indication that Robert Lutece, or anyone else who's used the interdimensional tear equipment, has become sterile themselves. It's just Comstock. There's also a notion that the technology made Comstock age super rapidly. But, again, this didn't happen to anyone else but him. It's just a poorly implemented plot device meant to impede the player from drawing premature associations between Comstock and DeWitt before the big reveal. Another nearby voxophone, again belonging to Rosalind Lutece, informs us that the child was the result of their little contraption, meaning Elizabeth isn't really from this reality. Although, what does that even mean at this point, since we've already crossed over into several different realities at this point? Even if Elizabeth had been born to a set of Comstocks, she still wouldn't be the child of the Comstocks, whose reality we currently inhabit. Upstairs, there's one more voxophone that is important to touch on.
Comstock has sabotaged our contraption. Yet, we are not dead. A theory. We are scattered amongst the possibility space. But my brother and I are together, and so I'm content. He is not. The business with the girl lies unresolved. But perhaps there is one who can finish it in our stead.
So now we know why the Lutece's are these strange godlike entities that pop in and out of the game to advance DeWitt's progress. But why did Comstock even attempt to kill them? If we skip over a ton of combat sequences and go straight to the interdimensional tear found within the Bank of the Prophet, we get a clue.
And if I do this sabotage, all their patents, all of them, Mr. Fink. Now, why does the Prophet want these two killed?
For the same reason Lady Comstock lies buried. Child.
And why does he want me to do it?
Because only you can make it seem an accident.
What we find out here is that Fink was the person who sabotaged the Lutece machine, and that he did it so that he could get all of their patents. But the more intriguing bit is that the Lutece's had to die, apparently for the same reason that Lady Comstock lies buried. Nearby is another one of Zachary Comstock's voxophones.
The Archangel tells me that Columbia will only survive so long as my line sits the throne. Yet Lady Comstock produces no child. I have done what a man can do, yet there is no child. I have a ask Lutessa about the matter, but even she refuses to help.
Curiously, this Voxophone recording is entitled A Broken Circle. It's a reference to the song Will the Circle Be Unbroken, which is performed by the voice actors at various points. The original song, written in 1907, literally has nothing to do with producing an heir, however. It's about whether or not Christian families will continue to be reunited in heaven through generational adherence to their faith. Now, remember that this game's central premise is that DeWitt cannot be allowed to undergo baptism. He and his daughter, thus, will not be reunited in heaven. Their circle will indeed be broken. In this same area is another one of Lady Comstock's recordings as well.
Lutessa says the bastard is a creation not of her womb, but of some unholy science. I do not know which is true. The child is no more divine than I. What says that for my husband's prophecy? He begs my silence, but I can only offer him forgiveness. But with repentance, need come truth. I can suffer his lies no longer.
So now the player has a pretty good idea that the evil Christian white nationalist leader murdered his own wife because she would maintain his absurd lies about a holy child's birth. Daisy Fitzroy didn't do nothing. The last tear is at a local photography shop.
But you two are dead. I took your funeral photo.
Yes, and made an absolute hash of it.
One doesn't expect a picture of one's corpse
to come across so lifelessly.
In case you haven't put all the pieces together at this point, Elizabeth spells it out for you on the way back to Comstock House.
He killed Lady Comstock. Lutessa's.
And anyone who knew the truth was better dead than alive.
I'm not even his daughter. I'm just some specimen to be poked and prodded.
No, you are not. Elizabeth, listen to me. What you've been through, ain't nobody in the world deserves that.
Booker.
We are getting out of here, you got it? You're never gonna have to look back.
Note here that DeWitt is once again signaling to the player his own disapproval of Comstock's behavior. Back at Comstock House, Lady Comstock's ghost attacks us with hordes of the undead again, and once we defeat her, she and Elizabeth have a dialogue.
I owe you an apology. Comstock used me to bring you back, but I brought back a version of you from the reality that I had built up in my own head. He pretended to love you. Like he pretended to love me.
Bastard child.
I am not your husband's bastard. I am his victim. My days of victimhood are done. We must forgive each other. Because there is one far worse than you or I.
The prophet killed me.
Because you wouldn't keep his secret.
If that's so, then why am I alive?
Not in this world. Maybe this is you in another. World where you never meet him.
Or where I saved him.
I don't know. Is that possible?
Find out, child. Find out.
Here, Elizabeth and her mother reconnect via their shared victimhood at the hands of their white male oppressor. Consider here the task given to Elizabeth and the player. Find out if Comstock can be saved. And the unequivocal answer to this, in the end, is no. However, there's also no escape for Elizabeth either, despite her condemnation of her father. It's almost poetic in a sense, because in real life, there's also no escape for white women who condemn their own people. From here, we cross the threshold of the gate to Comstock House and walk down a bridge. The backdrop consists of giant statues of George Washington, Benjamin Franklin, and Thomas Jefferson. The atmosphere is almost comically ominous and clearly wants an association to be drawn between the founders and a sense of overwhelming evil. When we pull a lever to take us across the way, Songbird attacks and throws DeWitt into a nearby tower. DeWitt is then rendered unconscious and enters another dream state inside his New York office. In the background, we can hear mobile crib music playing, and when we open the door to what is likely a nursery, we instead awake inside the tower and are confronted again by Songbird. The scene is meant to elicit more resentment toward Comstock. Remember, Elizabeth told us that returning to the tower would be a fate worse than death. After jumping around a bit on our skyhook, we get back down to the bridge and proceed to cross it. Somehow, we're suddenly transported to another realm wherein the bridge is lined with American founder statues. Inside the entryway of the building at the end, we can hear Elizabeth through another dimensional tear pleading with some aggressors. Undoubtedly the evil racist scientists of Columbia. Inside the building, we are confronted with a giant statue of Elizabeth herself, and we hear her voice speaking over an intercom.
Is that...
Some men dream of...
What the hell?
Some men dream of love. My father dreamt of a flood of fire. We were given Eden. And we turned it into Sodom. Why do we deserve salvation? The Lord gave Noah a fish in the form of a flood, but he was not so easy on me. He said, Prophet, I want you to train a nation of fishermen.
It's really bad rhetorical posturing, but essentially Comstock wants a nation based on perpetual genocide. He sees Noah's flood as a fish, and he wants to create a nation of fishermen. The idea is to never stop cleansing the Sodom below. It's pretty fantastical, and honestly, fairly indicative of what's going on inside of Ken Levine's head, but yeah, that's what it is. Once inside the next room, we can hear Elizabeth again struggling some more via a interdimensional tear. But we have much bigger problems. Now we have to fight our way through hordes of NPCs wearing masks of America's founding fathers. After this, we see that in order to get to where Elizabeth is currently being held, we have to find a way past a giant gate. An elevator comes down behind us, because reasons, and inside is a voxophone from Elizabeth.
I suppose the siphon is a kind of leash. Yes, my father put it on me. But when the time came, neither did I remove it myself. What would happen if I took off the leash and I found I was as obedient as ever?
Well, if a young girl grows up to be a woman, becomes independent of her father, and then retains the values he instilled in her, that probably not only means that he did a good job, but also that said values are actually quite useful. Yet the message here seems to be that unless women do the exact opposite of what their father told them to do, then they'll never know whether or not they're free. Do also note here that Elizabeth now has a black eye after we heard her repeatedly scream through the interdimensional tears. So clearly, her father is a very bad man, and we can safely associate everything he says from here on out with the beating of women. Upstairs, after we get off the elevator, we have to fight some more NPCs wearing the faces of our founding fathers. Then, we find another one of Elizabeth's voxophones.
Our minds are born festering with sin. Some are so blighted, they will never find redemption. The mind must be pulled up from the roots. My children are without blame. without fault and without choice. For what is the value of will when the spirit is found wanting?
By now, you may have noticed that we're in an insane asylum because Elizabeth is repeating all her father's nationalistic rhetoric. And that's just crazy talk. My God, the horror, Elizabeth is being converted into a trad woman or something. But I guess the true message of this game is beyond my tiny goy brain, because I didn't notice that Elizabeth uttered something about pulling it up by the roots, and Daisy Fitzroy said the same thing. So, like, there must be a deeper philosophical message about extremist views here, or something. Ken Levine is condemning both sides. Herder. There's symmetry here. Nearby, we can hear Comstock talking with Elizabeth through another dimensional tear.
Child, would you like to pray with me?
You're hurting me. Please just let me go.
We're going to cure you.
I'm not sick.
Your spirit is. All I ever wanted is to see you live up to your potential.
Oh my, the people telling us that we're insane are the ones who are really insane. Up ahead, we hear Elizabeth insist that DeWitt, i.e. our young male gamer, is coming to save her.
I'm Dr. Pettifog, Elizabeth, and I'll be taking care of you.
Get away from me.
Defiant, even after all this time. DeWitt just left you here. You need to give up on him, love.
He will come.
You're a white knight because she touched your hand and showed you some cleavage. When ascending the stairs to the next level, we can hear Elizabeth over an intercom system engaging in another anti-Christian trope.
And what did the Lord receive in return for his gifts? Eve and her apple, Sodom and Gomorrah. Humanity wrote a bad check, and the blood was the only way to settle accounts. For what is Columbia, if not a different arc in a different time?
It's just really fascinating that so many of the issues Ken Levine takes with Christianity are actually derived from the old Jewish Testament. Beyond that, I really don't understand where he gets the idea that American evangelicals felt that America was an ark for a second genocidal flood. Soon, we come upon another dimensional tear where Comstock informs us of what's about to happen to Elizabeth.
The child is ready. It's time. Prophet, even if we cure her, why do you think she'll do what you ask?
My daughter has two problems, Doctor. One is the condition your science will cure her of. The other affliction is of a spiritual nature.
What affliction is that?
Hope.
Oh my God, Comstock is so evil, he's crushing Elizabeth's hope that our young male gamer is coming to save her. Herder.
Your surgery is tomorrow, you know. You better eat. Oh, you still expect DeWitt to burst in and rescue you, don't you? It's been 6 months.
6 months?
More founding fathers to kill. Herder.
The girl and wipe away the debt. But in the end, he is the one who'll have to pay down all of our accounts, won't he? Where does his guilt start and mine end?
As I've been saying, in the end, all of this is DeWitt's fault and Elizabeth is his accomplice. Although for now, this level is a way to guilt the young male gamer for not saving Elizabeth from her father in time. And up ahead is a short film wherein Elizabeth tells us this herself.
A man once promised me that he would free me of my chains. But in the end, he abandoned me to serve his own needs. But in some ways, I thank him. He showed me exactly how much faith our species deserved. God put his faith in men once, too. It seems that we have something in common. Disappointment. I did not always love the prophet. In truth,
ran from his embrace. I even denied that I was his. I followed a man who seemed to be everything my father was not. That man was a false shepherd. And when the wolves came for me, he was nowhere to be found.
Note here that even though Elizabeth has quote-unquote embraced the prophet, she still thinks he and his followers are the wolves. Well, I guess they had to throw that in there in case our young male gamer was getting a little confused again. Finally, we get to the switch that will open that gate downstairs and let us through to where Elizabeth is being held. And there's another voxophone of hers nearby.
What I've done cannot be undone. I cannot stop what I have put in motion. But perhaps I can keep it from ever starting. He was my first hope. And now, he is my last.
Again, at this point, the player doesn't know that Comstock and DeWitt are in fact the same person. Likewise, they don't know Elizabeth is DeWitt's daughter, so the player is probably taking this redemption arc at face value, and thus will be that much more shocked by the in-game revelation that they were the bad guy they were fighting against all along. After we pull the switch, we get ambushed by more Founding Fathers, and we have to fight our way back down, as Elizabeth yells on the intercom about how the Sodom below must be baptized in fire for there to be salvation. At the end of her rant, she says, "Once this world has been born again, a million others wait their turn." Apparently, Comstock had been planning to use the Lutece technology to cleanse all realities of their Sodoms and Gomorrahs. He's like Hitler, but times a million and with quantum mechanics. Although curiously, it was the Allies who firebombed Hamburg, Germany, and referred to it as Operation Gomorrah. Once we return to the elevator, inside is, you guessed it, another voxophone.
Tomorrow the leash comes off, because all of this has to end. But even if I destroy the siphon, will I be strong enough to see all the doors and open whichever I choose? And if I bring him here, who is to say that he would be any match for the monsters I have created?
Okay, so after we exit the elevator here, we can finally cross the door's threshold. Rounding the corner, we hear Elizabeth screaming more, and we run into the Lutece twins yet again, who share some more metaphysical mumbo-jumbo using verb tenses. This is meant to prep us for what we're about to see, which is a version of Elizabeth from an alternate reality wherein she fulfills Comstock's aims.
As you can see, Booker, the lunatics are running the asylum. They don't even listen to me anymore. All I can do is watch as what I set into motion slides into its terminal stage. It took all I had left in me just to bring you here.
Elizabeth, I don't understand. I heard you screaming. I was coming to get you. Are we...
Here. Take my hand. The seed of the prophet shall sit the throne and drown in flame the mountains of man. Say what you will about Comstock, he was a hell of a fortune teller. Wasn't the torture that broke me, wasn't the indoctrination. It was time. Time rots everything, Booker. Even hope.
I was coming.
Songbird. He always stops you.
Yes, but I would find a way.
No. It's too late for me. I brought you here for your sake. Yours and hers. Yeah.
What is this?
It's for her. She'll know how to read it.
What does it say?
It's advice.
Advice on what?
How not to become me.
So not only is the future brainwashed, genocidal Elizabeth, not really brainwashed or genocidal, but she's now decided to warp us back to a 1912 timeline where there's still a chance to save her from becoming brainwashed and genocidal. Naturally, we can hear her screaming nearby. We burst into the next room to see scientists torturing her. Comstock is watching from above. He tells us that we've arrived a day late and a dollar short, and then he leaves. DeWitt then battles his way through hordes of racist, misogynist Colombians in order to turn off the machines that are imprisoning Elizabeth. Once he turns them off, Elizabeth summons a giant tornado, which somehow kills everyone in the room except for you and her. Then we rush to liberate her from the torture chair.
I got you, it's okay. Okay, I'm gonna fix this. You ready?
Just do it.
Here.
Help me with this.
I think someone meant for you to have this.
What is it?
Just read it.
Your dream of New York happens. It's me. I'm the one who...
She's given us a way to get past Songbird. We're going to find an airship and we'll leave
Booker.
Paris, Elizabeth. Remember, you wanted to go
We're not leaving. We are going to find Comstock.
Why?
You saw what he turns me into. I will not allow that.
And so what? You're going to kill him?
This is where you start moralizing, Booker. You forget. I know you.
I'm not going to let you kill him.
Really? Booker? What are you going to do to stop me?
Not a damn thing. Because I'm going to do it for you.
Ah, she's so powerful. She's such a powerful woman. Now that she's been freed by the young male gamer who's going to kill her patriarchal oppressor. I mean, it's the least we can do since she let us tie her corset. Now, if we go up to the room overlooking the torture chamber where Comstock was standing previously, we can listen to one of the scientists' voxophone recordings.
The procedure should help immensely with the issues we've had with the girl. Once the device is implanted, any effort on her part to alter the state of things will emit a most painful electric shock. Pavlov made a dog salivate. We'll make this one weep.
Perhaps the irony here is that Pavlov conditioned dogs to salivate, but Ken Levine is conditioning young white men to hate themselves and accept their own demise. From here, we descend into another elevator and finally confront Comstock. Oh, wait! We have to fight through another horde of Colombian racists! Nearby, there's another voxophone. This one's from Rosalind Lutess.
My brother has presented me with an ultimatum. If we do not send the girl back from where we brought her, he and I must part. Where he sees an empty page, I see King Lear. But he is my brother. So I shall play my part, knowing it shall all end in tears.
So now we know that the Lutesses were responsible for bringing Elizabeth into Comstock's world originally, and that Robert Lutess feels guilty for having brought about Comstock's prophecy. Robert sees an opportunity to change Comstock, but Rosalind knows better. Her reference to King Lear is somewhat strange, but requires too much time and effort to unpack. The point here is that Rosalind is telling the player that Comstock cannot be redeemed. There is no hope. Everything is set in stone. On the gondola ride over to Comstock's airship, Elizabeth strikes up another conversation.
Do you think it's possible to redeem the kind of things that we've done?
Redeem? I don't see much use in that.
Booker, Are you afraid of God?
No. But I'm afraid of you.
Herder. DeWitt is afraid of the strong women more than he is of God. Finally, we board Comstock's airship, and after battling through another horde of racists, we enter a room with a series of stone tablets, revealing that Comstock knew everything that was going to happen, from Lady Columbia falling to Elizabeth's killing of Daisy Fitzroy. And beyond the next door, we confront the man.
Come here, child. Oh, come on, I don't bite. My, oh my, how you have grown.
Tell me, what am I?
Look at you, child. You're
hey,
a mess.
Hey, let go of her.
Elizabeth, everything I've done to keep you safe.
Safe from what?
Seed of the prophet shall sit the throne and drown in flame the mountains of man. But the archangel revealed something else. Beware, prophet. Beware the false shepherd Booker DeWitt, for he shall be as a wall between her and destiny.
Why?
DeWitt, I'm a fool. I've sent mighty armies to stop you. I've rained fire on you from above. I did all of that to keep you from her when all I needed was to tell her the truth. Ask him, child. Ask him what happened to your finger. Ask DeWitt.
Let go of me.
Ask him. Ask the false shepherd. Tell her. Tell her, false shepherd. Tell her the truth.
My hand.
Tell her.
Please,
tell her about
go.
Her finger.
She's your daughter, you son of a bitch. And you abandoned her. Was it worth it? Huh? Did you get what you wanted?
Booker.
Tell me.
Booker.
Tell me.
It is finished.
Nothing is finished.
Booker.
You lock her up for her whole life.
Booker.
You cut off her finger and you put it on me.
Booker, stop it. You killed him. What did he mean? Huh? You tell me, what did he mean about my finger?
I don't know. I just assumed you were born with it. I don't know.
Your nose. It's bleeding.
What? Elizabeth, I swear to you, I have no idea what he was talking about.
You too. You just can't remember it.
No. I'll prove it to you. We'll destroy the siphon. The answer's behind one of your doors. You just have to open it.
Destroy the siphon? It's the entire tower, Booker. How are we gonna do that?
I don't know. But I'll think of something on the way.
Now the player is aware that DeWitt is connected to Elizabeth in some way, that he's responsible for her deformed pinky, and Elizabeth is beginning to turn the same anger she had toward Comstock toward DeWitt. From here we move on to the ship's control room, where Elizabeth pours over the note her alternate future genocidal self passed to DeWitt.
What is she trying to tell us? Cage. Cage, I'm missing something.
They said they knew what was best for us.
Booker.
They said they knew what was coming next.
Booker!
Did you see this coming, old man?
Okay, we gotta get
ready. Did you see this coming,
I think they mean to board us.
You ain't gonna place your daughter on the trunk. We're gonna place her in our grave.
Whoa, what are you doing?
We have to sing to him.
Sing to who? Elizabeth, stop it!
A-G-E! It's not a word, Booker! It's a song! Me. Will you do it? Will you do this for me? Just this one last thing. Please.
Now we have to fight the Vox Populi and use Songbird against them because, you know, we gotta convey some even-handedness again. After defeating the Vox Populi, Elizabeth suggests that we use Songbird to destroy the siphon, which is weakening her powers in this timeline. So from here, we'll watch the ending play out, and I'll interrupt periodically to comment.
Tear it down. Tear it all down.
The Whistler! Elizabeth! The bird, Elizabeth! I lost control! He's coming!
No, he isn't.
Where is he? Where is he?
Shh. It's okay. It's all right. I'm here. Just let go. There you go. There you go.
Elizabeth, I'm sorry.
Note that, just as Elizabeth has destroyed her protector, Songbird, here, she's also about to destroy her other protector, the young male gamer, not to mention her own father. The death of Songbird in this fashion is thus likely not by chance.
What is this place? Elizabeth?
It's a doorway. One of many. This way.
What do you mean it's a doorway? Where are you going?
Oh, come on. Yes, it's this way.
What Comstock said about your finger. Is there an answer here?
Down here! Over here, Booker! This is where we have to go.
Why? What is going on? Elizabeth, what do you mean this is a doorway?
I'll have to show you.
Probably gonna regret this. City at the bottom of the ocean? Ridiculous.
Thousands of doors. Opening all at once. My God, they're beautiful.
What, the stars?
Come on. Come on, it's this way. Come on.
Are you going to open it?
Oh, it's no good. Damn it. I thought once we were here, I could fully control it. I thought...
What is that?
It's a key.
Where did it come from?
It's always been there. I just couldn't see it. See? Not stars. They're doors.
Doors to?
To everywhere. All that's left is the choosing.
What are all these lighthouses? Why are we... Who are...
There are a million, million worlds. All different and all similar. Constants and variables.
What?
There's always a lighthouse. There's always a man. There's always a city.
How do you know this?
I can see them through the doors. You, me, Columbia, Songbird. But sometimes, something's different. Yet the same.
Constants and variables.
Yes.
Constants and variables. This is what the entire game has led us up to. The realization that while minor details may change, the laws of the universe are such that the same basic outcome will always be the same.
Look.
It's us.
Not exactly. We swim in different oceans, but land on the same shore. It always starts with a lighthouse.
I don't understand.
We don't need to. It'll happen all the same.
Why?
Because it does. Because it has. Because it will.
There are so many choices.
They all lead us to the same place. Where it started.
No one tells me where to go.
Booker. You've already been.
It'll happen all the same. Again, your choices don't matter, because no matter what you choose, the outcome will be the same. You may think you're innocent, that your path isn't set, but you've already done the very things you claim you won't.
Wait a minute. I know this place. I was here. It's been 20 years ago, right after Wounded Knee. I was looking for...
Come on now, time's a-wastin'.
Why were you here?
Are you ready to have your past erased? Are you ready to have your sins cleansed? Are you ready to be born again? Take my hand.
No. No, I don't want to.
But you already did, didn't you?
Are you ready to be born again?
I am.
Do you hate your sins?
I do.
Do you hate your wickedness?
Yes.
Do you want to clean the slate, leave behind all you were before, and be born again in the blood of the Lamb? Jesus, wash this man clean. Father, make him born again. Lord,
stop it.
What are you doing?
Do it. Get off me! Get off!
Son!
You didn't go through with it.
You think a dunk in the river's gonna change the things I've done? Let's get out of here. Hey, these doors of yours, they're all tears, right? Well, open one up. Open one up to Paris. I want to be shut of all this.
Not until we find Comstock.
Comstock's dead!
No. He was here. This way.
Baptism can't save you from your sins, and neither can running away. The evil white supremacist isn't dead, no matter how much you think he is, because as long as you still live, he dwells within you.
And what of my debts?
Bring us the girl, and wipe away the debt.
This is the man who hired me to find you.
Really?
Yes, the girl for the debt. Wait, no, this is wrong. What is this? There was no baby. I remember. There was no baby, and if there was, I sure as hell wouldn't give it over to this guy.
Booker, you don't leave this room. Until you do.
DeWitt, time is running short. Bring us the girl and wipe away the debt.
Go ahead.
No.
You can wait as long as you want. Eventually you'll give him what he wants.
How do you know all this?
I can see all the doors and what's behind all the doors. And behind one of them, I see him.
Comstock.
Now, this is seen by most fans as meta-commentary about how the outcome in most games is linear, and that's certainly true, but this doesn't exclude the much darker meaning, which is essentially that Ken Levine can see behind all the doors, and behind each and every one of them is some primordial, archetypal form of Adolf Hitler lying in wait.
What choice do I have?
The debt's paid. Mr. Comstock washes you of all your sins.
Bring us the girl and wipe away the debt.
There was no baby. The deal was I go to Columbia to get you.
Booker, you're bleeding.
No. I remember what I remember.
Now we've upset him.
I don't expect this next bit will do much for his mood.
Come on.
What are we doing here? Comstock's dead. We can just go on with our lives. You don't need
dead?
To...
You mean like Chen Lin? Like Lady Comstock? No. He is alive in a million, million worlds. It's not over because the Prophet is dead. It will only be over when he never even lived in the first place.
The world will not be safe until you, the Hitler lying in wait, never even existed. The darkest part here is that the player has unknowingly been led to this very conclusion himself. Almost assuredly, most players at this point felt that a man like Comstock was certainly evil and needed to die. But the players weren't aware yet that the game was telling them that they were Comstock, that they were Adolf Hitler lying in wait.
Hey!
Hey,
the deal's off, you hear me?
Unstable.
The deal is off!
Give
her back! Give her back!
Fine, are you mad?
Give her back, you son of a bitch!
It's ready! Go!
No! No, no, no!
Shut down the machine!
No!
Shut it down! Shut down the machine!
No!
Do it!
Give me back my daughter! No! Anna? No. No. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. Anna, I'm sorry.
So now the realization is settling in that you sold your daughter, Anna DeWitt, to Robert Lutece in order to wipe away your gambling debt that you had acquired due to your feeble attempts to address your guilt over Wounded Knee and the Pinkerton Agency.
She's gone, Booker. Anna's gone. You shared this room with your regret for almost 20 years. Until one day, a man came to you and offered you a chance at redemption. A chance for us to be together.
I told you it would work.
We already know it works. The question is, will he?
Anna. Anna. So sorry, Anna.
Do you suppose he branded himself as some sort of penance?
I should have.
Don't see the point. What's done is done. What's done will be done. I suppose the brand is his hair shirt, as he is ours.
Wipe away the debt. Bring us the girl. Wipe away the debt.
He's starting to put his story together.
Wipe away the...
You're quite fond of this theory of yours.
He's manufacturing new memories from his old ones.
Well, wipe away the brain adapts.
I should know.
Bring us
I
the
lived
girl.
It.
Wipe away...
Booker, wake up. Booker, wake up. This is where it started.
I sold you. I sold you.
To your credit, you did try to weasel out of the deal.
This is all Comstock's fault. What if I went back? Killed him before he did any of this?
Things get set in motion.
How would one know how far back to go?
That's the only way to do it. Go back to when he was born, and I'll smother this son of a bitch in his crib.
Again, the darkest part about all this is that Ken Levine probably had most players on board with traveling back in time to kill baby Hitler, not knowing that essentially Ken was getting them on board with traveling back in time to kill themselves.
Booker, are you sure this is what you want?
I have to. It's the only way to undo what I've done to you.
Booker DeWitt, are you ready to
what
be born
this?
Again?
Why are we back here?
This isn't the same place, Booker.
Of course it is. I remember. Wait.
Are you ready to leave behind all
you're
that
not...
has gone before? Wipe the
not...
slate clean.
Who are you?
You chose to walk away, but in other oceans, you didn't. You took the baptism.
Do you hate your sins?
You were born again as a different man. It all
wickedness?
Has to end, to have never started. Not just in this world, but in all of ours.
Smother him in the crab.
Smother. 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 Before the choice is made. Before you are reborn.
And what name shall you take, my son?
He's Zachary Comstock. He's Booker DeWitt.
No. I'm both.
Endings are very important to Ken, but despite the success of System Shock 2 and BioShock, it wasn't until now that he was truly happy with how one of his games ended.
I think we tried, but the endings weren't really what I hoped they'd be. I think in Infinite, for the first time, I think, from at least my perspective, I feel like the ending expresses what the game is about in a way that the other games didn't, and really is holistically the expression of the meaning of the game.
Is it fair of me to describe it as deliberate, calculated, psychological conditioning designed to demoralize white people and to emasculate white men in particular? Am I imagining things and believing that the mass media are slanted deliberately by the people who control them with the aim of weakening white people and softening them up for the slaughter? Do I believe such things only because I don't like Jews